Hey, Brendan.
Hello, Alan.
I feel like we only recorded like a few days ago.
Your feeling is correct.
I feel like I actually only saw you like 3 days ago.
That's also correct. We recorded a shorter period between recordings, and we saw each other in person.
Yeah.
So
yeah. We had a Not a Thing podcast meetup at Bear Republic up in Healdsburg. We didn't really announce it very well. We did have a fan show up. I mean, she did come in the car with us, and she is my wife. So, you know, whatever. Still counts.
We'll pretend she had a choice.
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep doing that. Well, Not a Thing podcast is still rolling. We're still well on our way to our 100th episode. If you would like to take part in the episodes on the way up to that 100th episode, please let us know. It'd be fun. I tweeted out the I think I said, if you want to be our sponsor, let me know. And then I tagged it with Flat Earth.
Yeah.
I think that should be the sponsor. If you want to sponsor on behalf of a Flat Earth, please let us know.
Yeah, go ahead. Ken Ham, feel free to contact us. You're a terrible human being, but I will say whatever you say if you pay me to.
Excellent. Well, I don't think... I'm pretty sure we can't be imprisoned for saying it's a flat earth, but you can be imprisoned for pirating movies if the MPAA and other kind of copyright suit happy kind of places had anything to do with it. What's interesting, though, is that there was a jail in... Oh, I can't remember. I think it was Pennsylvania. I'm not sure where. Or was it?
It was in Ohio.
Oh, okay. One of those states.
East of here.
Yes. Yes. Anyway, in at this jail, they would show movies when prisoners were kind of in holding pens, essentially, or waiting for processing of various things. And this one inmate was there for he was there for pirating movies among other things. He was also in jail for transporting a minor across state lines or something like that.
I believe it was sexual misconduct or unlawful sexual conduct with a minor.
Yikes. Okay. So maybe the piracy of movies bit was kind of like a tack on to it, but he was still technically in jail for that. I mean,
well, the,
other things.
So he was arrested or had his date in court in 2010, and he had met the girl on MySpace, which that's impressive.
Well, anyway, so while dude is waiting around to be sentenced or not sentenced to be, you know, processed into, you know, general population or whatever, apparently they were showing movies in the waiting area or whatever you call it in a jail. I've never been in prison. I don't know how it works.
But, I don't either. I don't want to talk about it.
Yeah. But anyway, he's hanging out there, and he noticed that they were showing Wolf of Wall Street, and there was another movie. But
Ride Along.
What was it?
Ride Along.
Oh.
The Kevin Hart Ice Cube vehicle. Vehicle.
Wah, wah. Anyway, neither of which were released to video or any other kind of streaming source. So these were movies that had come from a movie theater very, very recently. In fact, he noticed that these were cammed films, so you could see people walking in front of the camera and that kind of thing. And so He thought it was really messed up that at a prison where he was being, you know, held for, again, some other thing and piracy of movies. And they were showing pirated movies. How do you reform a person if you're showing the thing that that person is in jail for at the prison? I don't know. In short, I think it probably isn't a thing. The prison guards and whatever in, at this jail were probably not doing the right thing. But at the same time, you know, you just, I feel like you shouldn't get that much entertainment when you're in jail either.
Well, and more importantly, don't watch cams. They suck. Get DVD. Wait for the DVD rip. Blu-ray.
I remember the thing, the big thing used to be what they called R5 rips. And I don't know why they're called R5s, but they usually came from Russia. And the deal was that it would be someone with access to a print of the film. And usually it was someone that was in with a projectionist, because they would be recorded from essentially the projection booth. So it would be, you know, well set up. It would still be a cam, but it would at least be, you know, a clean kind of shot of the theater. It wouldn't be off angle, all that kind of stuff. So I've heard.
I'll defer to your expertise.
I won't go so far to admit that I've watched pirated movies, but I know of them, and you're right. I think using cams was that was punishment enough, because it did sound like he had seen the film something like 4 times in the amount of time he was being processed. It's like, I feel like
Wolf of Wall Street's not a short movie. A long movie. A good movie, but long.
I won't speak to Ride Along as a movie. But watching a cam film of that, like, multiple times, I think that might, like, stray into Cruel and Unusual. I don't know.
Kevin Hart is hilarious, Alan. I don't know what you're talking about.
Well, something that's even less hilarious than that is the Knights Templar cartel in Mexico. I've already forgotten the Spanish kind of name for it. Oh, it's not going to come to me. It's a drug cartel, and they're branching out. It was interesting because the article names them as a drug cartel, but then says that they really have they're more like a, you know, a mafia kind of thing, because it's not just drug cartel drugs that they're kind of working on. They've diversified. So in this case, it talks about acting as a lime cartel. If you've been to the store recently, or you've been out for drinks, you might notice that limes are kind of in shorter supply, and they're generally more expensive. And this is 100% a cartel-driven kind of action. I thought it maybe was a crops thing, or a a blight or something like that. It's like, nope. It's just drug cartels, or rather, lime cartels, I guess. Figuring out how to put some pressure on a business and then squeezing it. And it goes through a pretty good, like, yeah, it's limes. Squeezing. It's pretty good, right?
Oh, man.
Thanks, man. Thanks. I have it written down in my notes. I'm not kidding. It says squeeze. Anyway, the deal is that there are a bunch of crops that come out of Mexico that could be manipulated in this way supply wise. But the article goes through a really nice examination of why it's limes and not, say, strawberries. And it goes through a bunch of factors like the regions where the limes come from are pretty much in one place that can be easily kind of controlled, like border wise, and then pressure enacted in that way. And it's somewhat depressing, but also interesting that the way that it's described. The thing that I'm surprised that they didn't talk about was one of the reasons, and I'd read this in another article about the lime, the rising price of limes, was that they attributed the diversification into limes to the U.S. importing less marijuana, which I thought was...
Thanks, Colorado.
Yeah.
Way to go, Colorado. You made my margaritas and gin and tonics more expensive.
But have you noticed... you've noticed the lime prices recently.
Yes. Yes, they are higher.
I think it's...
But it's still not that expensive.
Well, yeah. I think when I was out last, it was like 70 cents a lime or something like that. Although... I think I'm pretty lucky living in California in that limes can grow here. I don't know anyone growing limes, although I can get lemons from two different fences. It's the nice thing about living in California is if the plant crosses your property line, any fruit on your side of the property line you can take. And I do. I need to con my neighbor into planting a lime tree. I think it's what it means.
Yeah, you just tell him, you know, it really would complement the color of your lemon tree to have a nice lime tree next to it. Don't worry about trimming it.
Yeah, right. We won't have any problems over here. No problems. I think I wonder if you can graft limes onto a lemon tree.
Probably.
I know that there are fruit trees that you can graft like different things onto, and I always thought that was a little weird. Like, you know, you're essentially fooling that plant into, you know, doing something else. But whatever.
Couldn't you just do that to your neighbor's tree? Could you graft a lime branch to the lemon branch that's currently in your yard?
I might have to try this. That might have to be a thing. Yeah, right. I mean, I think the branches that are crossing over into our side, they may not be sturdy enough to do that, but you know, it's worth some research. Why not? Yeah, what could possibly go wrong?
Just make sure you price it out so that you're actually not spending more money trying to set this up than it would be just to go buy limes. The old DIY trap.
Oh, let's not talk about that. This podcast is kind of in the red. Oh, but we love it. We love producing this podcast. That's something that I actually did this week, was put my public comment on the FCC's website. We talked about it last week and have in the past, but the FCC opened their site for public comment about the net neutrality threatening rule changes that they're adding. And yeah, go up, check it out, leave a comment. You know, if you feel the need to mention our show in the process, that's fine. It all becomes public record, so and we'll take the free advertising. But really, it's about net neutrality, so, you know.
I don't know if you want us mentioned, based on some of the things we've said about the government, may not be good for us.
Oh, we're actually going to say a little more about the government, because there was a story this week about the Obama administration has said categorically they're going to stop a CIA program, which I think this is brilliant. The CIA program did a they would do a vaccination push. They would go into countries, and I think they do mention specifically Iraq and Afghanistan, and under the guise of a medical mission doing vaccinations, they would actually be using the vaccinations to get DNA samples and information and you know, and essentially use it as an information gathering tool to in other countries. But the worst part to me was that apparently it wasn't that they were using a vaccination program and then kind of covertly taking all of their information, like, you know, oh, well, we'll vaccinate you, but give us your address. You know, they're not doing that. It was a phony vaccination. So they weren't even giving these people vaccines, which I think is
that's all bad.
It's just awful. I mean, it's giving the U.S. a bad name and vaccines a bad name. I mean, hasn't Jenny McCarthy done enough for vaccines? We don't need the CIA messing it up too. So, yeah, come on, CIA, please.
Not a thing.
I mean, yes, the CIA probably should be a thing and probably should gather information, but maybe not with phony vaccines.
Yeah, at least give out real vaccines if you're going to do that.
Yeah, I feel like there's some quid pro quo. But kind of one more for the good guys in the information gathering, or the what do you call that? The just personal space invading, information gathering kind of thing.
In the destruction of our civil liberties?
Yes, yes. In California, a bill has passed through one of the houses of the legislature. I don't know which one, but it passed with only one vote against. And we should really look up who that person is and campaign for them to be out of office. But anyway, that person voted against a bill which eventually passed through that side of the legislature, which requires a judge's warrant to do any kind of searches on cell phone records or computer data. And so it extends the warrant kind of protection to technology, essentially, and I can only think this is a good thing. It essentially breaks any of the stuff that the NSA was doing in California. I mean, whether or not they would actually do it anyway, I'm going to put aside for a moment. But it was frequently described as kind of warrantless wiretapping, essentially giving them access to cell phone data and records and recordings and computer data in general. So by requiring a warrant, it slows that process down and hopefully makes it so you can't just blanket, you know, gather data in nefarious ways. You really have to be targeted, because there has to be a purpose for that invasion of privacy. So, yay,
well, it's
California.
Nice to see a state government making the federal government follow our federal constitution. They call the Fourth Amendment that they seem to have forgotten about. It's nice that they get a reminder.
Yeah. So we'll hope that passes both houses, and Governor Moonbeam will put his name on that one, and we'll all be okay.
Good old Moonbeam.
Oh, one of my friends mentioned that he played basketball with Jerry Brown when he was still just mayor of Oakland, which I think is kind of cool. Anyway, yeah. The sign more that you bill. Know. It'd be good.
It's a slam dunk.
I can't think of the sports reference to bridge into the next thing. Mainly because it's a different sport. We're talking about a research report that was put together about helmet safety for bicyclists, and it mentions a couple big statistics from a few different sources. One from Australia and one from the UK and some stuff from the US, but it mostly is data that, you know, shows that helmets in and of themselves don't necessarily protect you more when you're on a bike versus any other time that you might want a helmet because of, you know, the potential for head injury. And they mention just generally being in a car or even just walking. And I thought it was an interesting kind of take because it does talk about a few different factors for helmets and how wearing a helmet will protect you from injury. But at the same time, helmet laws and kind of enforcing the people wear helmets can have a detrimental effect on people just riding a bike. And it holds up another study that said that the more people you have riding bikes, the safer you generally are. And I kind of agree with that statement. I think when there are more people on bikes on the road immediately around you, I think that actually helps a lot more than really anything else, just from a visibility perspective. But I still feel like if I were riding alone on a bike, whether I have a helmet or not, I feel like it's like cars still don't get it, at least where I live. So I'm kind of the mind, I would rather have a helmet if I were going to be on a bike.
Yeah, I'm not sure I interpret these studies the same way that the author of the article did. It's like, yeah, it doesn't make a difference in the total number of head injuries because you're going to get head injuries anyways.
Yeah.
But it definitely has an impact on the severity of those injuries.
Right. Yeah, I mean, how can it not? It's like you're adding a layer of protection where there wouldn't be one. So I think it kind of bites if it's a legislated kind of thing and if people aren't doing it. But I think wearing a helmet and the kind of social pressure of people in any kind of community is enough to get people to wear helmets. I mean, I know every group that I've ever ridden with didn't have to say wear a helmet. It was just everyone did, and it was like, okay, well, yeah, of course I'm going to wear a helmet. I mean, even if I didn't already have at least two incidences where I've gone over the handlebars and probably, you know, owe a lot to wearing a helmet. I just knew. It's like, yeah, you wear a helmet. It's you fall off bikes. Like, that's a thing. So, yeah, wear helmets. It's good.
Yeah. If looking cool is more important to you than having brain damage, then don't wear a helmet. I don't want, if that's how you think, I don't want you to wear a helmet. Do us all a favor and don't wear one.
Well, I've taken my share of bumps coming off of a bike, and one thing that it probably has affected is my memory. So I probably will not be participating in these memory athletic competitions that are coming out. There's an article this week titled "Memory as an Extreme Sport," and it talks about competitions where people memorize stuff, and it's kind of sponsored by some folks in the research community about memory, but there was also one sponsor that is a pharmaceutical company that's developing drugs to help kind of that memory process and loading and unloading of memory and things like that, and kind of research about techniques. So the things that they make people do is memorize a deck of cards and then be able to like a sequence of a shuffle deck of cards and then be able to spit that back out. And they have like a time, it's timed for you to read it or to be exposed to the cards and then write down what you saw or something like that. Then there was one where, you know, it's just reciting digits of pi or speeches, things like that. And I think I thought the article was interesting, not from the point of view of, oh wow, look at all these things that you can remember, how, you know, what you know, that this is considered a thing. Like remembering stuff is a thing. Because I think that is kind of interesting, right? In the age of smartphones, you don't need to necessarily remember stuff. You just have to be able to look it up and have some cell signal when you want to look it up.
Just need to remember where my phone is.
But what was really funny for me was that the different techniques that people use to remember stuff is pretty much all the kind of stuff that you learned when you were kind of growing up and had to memorize like states and capitals or, you know, other kind of weird things. You would have to, it's easier to remember things either in context or by association to other things. So if you can remember like a layout of, you know, remember something visually, because it's laid out, you know, in a room or something, that would help. Or in context of, like places in a house, like there was one guy who would write down things on flashcards and then leave them in a specific sequence around his house. And then as he walked through his house, it would trigger all of those memories in that kind of order. And so, yeah, it's just weird tricks to kind of remember stuff. I think though,
Sherlock Holmes style mind palace, that's the way to do it.
Yeah, I think my favorite still has to be telling a story with the bits of data. And I would do this, because I think the mind naturally kind of makes a story up, whether it makes sense or not. And it's kind of fun to do. So one way that I would do this was that if I had a set of stuff that I had to buy at the grocery store, and they were kind of weird, disparate parts, I would make up a story that would make sense of those things. So it'd be like, I need to, because let's say I need to buy, you know, asparagus for dinner, and I have to buy, you know, a new thing of toothpaste and light bulbs. And so the story for that would be, I need to get toothpaste so I can brush the asparagus out of my mouth, and I need light bulbs because I can't see because I don't like brushing my teeth in the dark. That kind of thing.
And I need to remember to get condoms because fuck it.
Wouldn't it mean you don't need condoms, so you say fuck it?
See, this is why I don't use stories, Alice.
Well, it's still kind of an interesting kind of set of things. I mean, I don't think I go on any I don't know. Do you have any mnemonics that you keep or still use?
I do finish the ABCs with "Next time, won't you sing with me?"
Yeah, that's one of those things I don't think you can get away from. I bet if I were given a like sobriety test and they made me say my ABCs, I would probably have to sing them. But
no, seriously though, I want someone to sing the ABCs with me. That's all I'm looking for.
That's a thing for sure. Well, kind of in that ABC kind of mentality, there was a thing that our, you know, a listener to the podcast, friend of the podcast, Claire Clifton, mentioned to me this last weekend about, I think it's called the Spreeder extension to Chrome, and it's spelled Spreeder, so it's like speed reader, and it's so fast that you crush it together. But it's based on a technique which was put together by Spritz, I think is the name of the company, and they have I can't remember the name of the way that they their technique for presenting words so you can read them faster reduces what's called subvocalization, where when you're reading, if you have to say each word in your head. I mean, you can get legitimately fast doing that. I mean, you can essentially say those words really fast, but you still have to kind of form the word and then go past it. So this speed reading technique presents the words very quickly, just one by one on a screen. And by doing it this way, it flashes them in the same kind of space, so your eye doesn't even have to move left to right because it's just a single word. So you can just take it in your, you know, center of your vision, and your and then it processes, it forces your mind to process it, you know, essentially in that instant, and then move on to the next word right away. And I was surprised at how well it worked. I mean, they have a nice demo on their website, which we'll link in, and it has the text from the article, and you can punch it through this reader, and you can ratchet the speed up. I mean, it defaults at 500 words per minute, and I swear just doing it at – or no, it defaults at 250, and I swear just doing it at 250 feels really slow. Like, I pushed it to – I think it was like 500, and that
did you
is
go,
starting.
You went full data.
Well, that 500 is starting to get like really fast. I found the app and installed it into Chrome and just tried it on a Wikipedia page, and I pushed it up to 700, and it was doable. It's really quite amazing. So something to give a try. Did you try it out?
No, I did not.
Yeah, it's something to look at. It's interesting because I think it's a different mode of reading, which really isn't implemented in a lot of stuff yet. I think they do have like an iOS app for it, but it's not on like it's not built into like a Kindle or anything yet. And that was actually an article that we found about e-readers versus just plain old paper for reading. And there have been some studies. I mean, the Kindle and other e-reading, you know, it's essentially screens, have been around since, 2000? 2005? Something like that.
Something like that.
I feel like it's been, 10-ish years. So it was a pretty good study talking about, different modes of reading and reading from devices versus paper. And it made a pretty good distinction between reading on paper being more likely to involve the reader in kind of a deep reading state, was what they called it. And the reason for that was that reading off of a device has the baggage of the device being a technological device, and so many technological devices like phones and laptops and everything else have distraction capabilities kind of built in. And so a book by contrast, does not. I mean, it's pretty much just for reading. You can't use it for anything else. And so not having that that kind of distractions, like, you know, a thumb swipe away makes you more likely to kind of retain and hold the data better. I think it's difficult to really make that conclusion, only because people have been reading, you know, only for a short amount of time. I mean, it's been 10 years, but it's still, reading comes, I think, for most people from, you know, their knowledge of books up until this point. It would be really interesting if the study were more focused on, you know, people that learned to read essentially from e-readers and didn't really have that association with books.
Well, I think there's a difference between an e-reader and a tablet or a phone. I mean, if you're using a Kindle, just a plain Kindle, it's just like a book. It doesn't have those distracting features.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but you're right.
I mean, I read on a Kindle pretty regularly, but I don't bother reading other than just articles. I don't read things on my phone. I'm not going to read a book.
Yeah, I find that I do. I don't read. I mean, I read books on my e-reader, but I do read articles on my phone kind of quite a lot. And I know that, you know, that I think it doesn't. It's not necessarily that you would be distracted when you were reading when I'm reading on an e-reader. It's more that I am less likely to be involved because I feel like it's just another device that I'm reading on.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think there's some stuff to be gleaned from that. I think the jury's still out. I do like paper for reading when I don't want kind of any devices out. Like I'll like reading outside, I will always do with a book. I know that the new Kindles really look nice kind of in the sun and do well with it, but there's just something nice about putting the book kind of over your face when you want to take a break and kind of take a nap. Can't really do that with a Kindle. It's too
flat. It gets too hot.
Yeah. So I think we're going to move from the land of reading to a different land. We'll be transported magically away into spoiler land. So this is, I think, maybe one of the few times on the show when we're actually going to go into spoiler land for a movie. And we're going to be talking about Godzilla. So fair warning, or maybe you're not warned. Maybe you're still excited to see it after you hear us talk about it. But we both saw it this last week, and I think the preliminary verdict was it was freaking awesome.
that's accurate.
it's really funny because I saw it with my mother-in-law, and she was really excited and enjoyed the film, but I don't think it was like the first date. No, it definitely wasn't the first date, but it was one of the first few times that I met her was when I was dating her daughter, my wife. But it was maybe within 6 months or so, and one of the first times I'd met her to do anything else, she had come down to San Luis Obispo where we were, and she wanted to see a movie with us, and Godzilla was playing. She was a fan of the original movie and wanted to see it. So this was in 1998. This was the Matthew Broderick just
disaster.
Awful movie.
It was a disaster of a disaster film.
Yes, absolutely. It was really bad. Just really embarrassingly bad.
The only good thing to come out of that is the episode of the podcast, How Did This Get Made?, which covers everything that's wrong with Godzilla.
Ooh, I bet that's a good listen.
It is.
Well, this movie, this new movie, really has nothing to be ashamed about. It was good. I think it was good pretty much on all the things that I wanted to see. And It was light on all the things that I didn't want to see. So from that measure, it was very good. There were still enough kind of surprises about how things went that it, it, you know, held my attention, and there was enough things visually that were just really well revealed. Like, you wouldn't see all of Godzilla until, you know, the director wanted you to see it. You wouldn't, you'd be kind of, it'd be a shot over Godzilla in the water, and you'd be just like, hey, what's going on? Why are we, oh, look, their boat's there. We're traveling along with Godzilla like he's an escort or something. It's great. You know, just nicely shot sequences, and still have enough human element without it being like super duper sappy, which I think.
Yeah, it was not sappy.
Yeah, there were a couple moments where, you know, it's like, oh, there's a kid. Oh, he's sort of in danger. All right, now we're not. Okay, we're not.
It didn't stretch it out.
Yeah, right. I thought that was the right point. It was just the right amount of kind of, you know, endangerment, I guess. I think the I don't know. What did you think, Brennan? What other thoughts did you have?
I really liked it. It's a rare case where I had very high expectations based on who was involved with the movie, and they paid off. Like, I was perfectly satisfied. I think my only knock would be on the main character's acting. It wasn't bad acting; it just was kind of wooden.
Yeah,
like, there wasn't a lot. He didn't have a lot, and it's not necessarily his fault. Like, there's not a ton of dialogue in this movie,
right?
But it. I was hoping that Gareth Edwards would be able to do something cool because I really liked his other movie Monsters,
mm-hmm.
which he shot for like, he made for like $500,000.
Right.
So to see him get to make a movie with a $160 million budget could be pretty good.
Yeah.
And he did a great job. Right from the beginning, the opening credits with all the redacted credits and old footage just immediately hooked me. I was into it right off the bat.
Yeah, that was great. It was a really well done sequence where they would show the, you know, the credits of the movie. So it would show the actors that were in it, the producer, the writer, but it would show it as if they were captions to like stock footage, and then they would draw lines over some of the data as if they were, you know, crossing out that for secret purposes or whatever. But it would happen just as soon as it would show up, but you would have it like sort of a chance to read it. So you know, if I'd been up on my speed reading before watching the film, it would have been great. I'm sure someone has already transcribed all of the things that got crossed out, and I look forward to finding that webpage.
But there are just a lot of great shots, and I didn't know this going into it, but the cinematographer, Seamus McGarvey, was the same cinematographer for this other little movie called The Avengers. So it's not surprising that like big action scenes actually looked good.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. I think it looked great. I think the way that they did the character design for Godzilla especially was right. I mean, it has some elements of the man in the suit Godzilla, and yet it still looks believable as a kind of big monster kind of character. One thing that I thought was really interesting is there's kind of a theme in the movie of humanity being kind of arrogant about what it can control. And you know, there's a great line about humanity and nature. But I thought what was great was that not only can humanity not control kind of nature and stuff like that, humanity apparently cannot control anything nuclear. Pretty much every instance in the movie of doing, you know, there's a plan and a nuclear thing, whether it be a power plant or a weapon, or, you know, transporting them from one place to another or doing something with it. Every one of those things failed. and most kind of surprisingly for me was that at the end of the movie, and I don't think it really spoils anything, the option is there's a bomb that they have to kind of diffuse or get it out of the city so it doesn't obliterate the city, and they have the guy that knows how to diffuse it, and he's alone in front of the bomb, and he doesn't diffuse it. It goes off. It's like, yeah, we don't really handle nuclear stuff well either. So I thought it was kind of a good humans should be humble kind of film, although it's like five or six down on the movie themes list as they go.
Right. Now, I'll be seeing it again probably in the next week or so.
Nice. Nice. Although this week is the new X-Men.
Yep, X-Men this week. Oof.
Yeah, that's going to be...
I'm cautious about that one. I've been burned before.
Yeah, it's true. Although, if you do the math on it, it's the second one, so it should be good, right?
I guess so.
Because it was X-Men, the third one, Last Stand, which was less good.
Right.
Although, the more I think about it, I don't remember how the second X-Men movie went. I feel like I liked
it. I think it was good.
Yeah, I feel like I liked it. Yeah, and I liked the second Wolverine movie.
Yeah, that's true.
So
the first one was not so good.
Yeah. Well, in any case, that's something to look forward to for next week. Let's see, what else is happening this coming weekend? Oh, well, it's Memorial Day, so we'll have Monday off if you're... in the United States. Hooray, USA, USA. But this Saturday is the San Jose Taco Festival of Innovation, which is just an excuse to eat a whole lot of tacos, which I'm very much looking forward to. Something like 35 taco trucks are converging in San Jose for the afternoon on Saturday, and they're doing a taco menu, whether they normally produce tacos or not, for the show, and so that'll be fun. It's the third year running. The reason it's got the subtitle of Innovation was because the first one was sponsored by Toyota when they were launching the new models of Prius, the like compact one and the kind of bigger one. And I don't know if Toyota is still associated with it, but they've kept the name, and I think it is funny. Innovation. Tacos.
Definitely thanks.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. Well, I will... I think let's wrap this one up, and I will talk to you next week, Brandon. Hopefully, if people want to be on the show or sponsor hashtag Flat Earth, do let us know. It'll be good. We'd be happy to have you on the air.
Until next time, Alan.
Right on, Brandon.